This is the web stream of KBOO Portland. KBOO is 100% community supported. If you have not yet become a member, go to the website kboo.fm and click on the tip jar.
That progressive forces are seeking to work toward are being thwarted by one single mechanism, and that mechanism is secretive banking. Occupy Portland Radio is making a firm stance regarding secretive banking and that it must end everywhere around the world forever. Secretive banking is the source of the problem. Any issue that you care about can be directly connected with secretive banking. Before we get started, we have a brief communique from a group known as Operation Outrage. We'll go to that now.
This is the brainstem of Operation Outrage. We are communicating to you to stress the importance of defeating the heart of darkness, the worldwide heart of all attacks on the environment, all attacks on justice, all attacks on progress. Secretive banking is the problem. The time to do something about it is now. Operation Outrage has one position and one position only. Secretive banking is the source of drug money laundering. It is the source of international terrorism financing. It is the root cause of austerity, and it is the mechanism whereby global governmental corruption is made to happen. Human trafficking, illicit arms deals, all of the above have been proven beyond a shadow of a doubt to be connected with secretive banking. Operation Outrage demands that the United States government, as a national security issue, seize all secretive banking immediately. Seize the moment, seize the money. This has been a communique from Operation Outrage. Learn more at operationoutrage.blogspot.com. That is all.
Okay, that was a communique from Operation Outrage. And with that, let's get started with the rest of the show.
I found someone new. He's waiting in the car outside.
go now to an interview that I conducted with Celeste Mayfren, who's the consumer and taxpayer advocate for OSPR, which is the Oregon State Public Interest Research Group. They're located here in Portland.
OSPR is pursuing a couple of initiatives that are directly related to our overarching topic regarding offshore tax havens and secret banking. Celeste, OSPR has been petitioning Governor Kitzhaber to get rid of secret money, which I understand is related to the tax subsidies and where those are going and who's receiving that money and what the outcomes of that cost to the Oregon taxpayer are. Tell me more about that initiative that you have going on.
Sure. And thanks for having me on. So OSPRG is, we're working on a campaign called No Secret Money in Salem. So every 2 years, $665 million is used for corporate tax subsidies that are intended to create jobs and promote economic growth across the state. But unfortunately, there hasn't been a lot of transparency about who's receiving the subsidies, what taxpayers are getting in exchange for the subsidies, and whether or not companies are actually delivering on their promises. And so we're working to make sure that the Kitzhaber administration works with his state agencies to be more forthcoming with the information. In a lot of ways, it's like tax, if you were to pay somebody to fix your roof and then never check and find out if he actually did the job that you hired him to do. And we think that taxpayers have a right to see their return on investment.
Part of the problem that you have with the current situation regarding that money is, on your website, you mentioned that there's a 2-year-old transparency law that relates to this, and you're not satisfied with the level of disclosure. It's on a state website, is that right?
That's right, yeah. So in 2011, OSPR worked with a bipartisan coalition of state legislators to pass a bill that basically requires that a set of information related to 18 corporate economic development tax subsidies be posted on Oregon's transparency website. And the idea is that any member of the public in Oregon can hop online to the transparency website and see what the subsidy programs are, who the companies are that are receiving these subsidies, how much they're getting, what they're promising in return, and whether or not they're actually delivering on their promises. So now, 2 years later, after this law passed, it covers 18 programs, but only 6 of the programs have a report available for the public online, and only one of them has all of the information that's requested by the law. So right now, taxpayers can't see a full picture of how their tax dollars are being spent.
What is that website that you're referring to?
It's the Oregon Transparency website. It's oregon.gov/transparency, and then specifically on the tax expenditures page.
Okay, and what's the law that enabled that transparency requirement?
So it's House Bill 2825, which was passed in 2011, and it's Oregon Revised Statute 184.484, so anybody can hop online and read the law. It's also, we just released a report on Wednesday called Revealing Tax Subsidies 2013. So all of the information on this law and what it does and how well the state has complied with the law is in that report as well. And that's available on our website.
And so this is connected to another piece of news that you have on the OSPR website regarding the Department of Justice orders the release of more hidden tax subsidy data. Tell me about what it took to get that done.
Sure. I filed a public records petition with the Department of Justice after Business Oregon, which is the state's economic development department, denied a public records request that I had made with them to get the annual employment reports for the Strategic Investment Program, which is one of the largest economic development tax subsidies in the state. Every 2 years, Oregon taxpayers spend $322 million on this program, so it's a pretty substantial program. And then again, the companies, we haven't, as the public, haven't been able to see whether or not they're actually creating jobs that they had promised. But so Business Oregon denied my request, and so I put in a petition with the Department of Justice, the Attorney General's office, and after reviewing our petition, ordered Business Oregon to give me the documents that I had originally asked for, and essentially reinforcing what we already know, which is that the public has a right to see this information. We're making a significant investment in economic development across the state, And we're giving a lot of money to companies to create jobs and promote economic growth. And so we as taxpayers have a right to see whether or not they're actually delivering what they promise.
So the state of Oregon is maintaining secrecy about how taxpayer money is being spent on economic development. You guys are pursuing that in a couple of different ways. And you guys are also interested in how offshore tax havens cost average Oregon taxpayer $816 a year and Oregon small business $2,350 a year. So this is where companies are offshoring their profits and pretending that they're non-taxable?
That's right. So 83 of the top 100 publicly traded corporations in the United States use tax haven countries and shell corporations. They transfer money overseas to countries that have a very low tax rate to avoid paying taxes on the profits in the United States. And essentially that is costing the federal treasury about $100 billion. What we did with that report is basically quantify how much is $100 billion actually for an individual taxpayer. The other thing I'll say about the offshore tax havens is not only are taxpayers hurt by that on the federal level, but also on the state level, because when companies shift their profits overseas to avoid paying taxes on it, they're both avoiding federal taxes and state taxes. And so we have a proposal in the Oregon legislature right now that would basically require that corporations include the assets they have in tax haven countries as taxable income in Oregon and bring some of that money back to our state, which we all know we're facing a pretty serious budget crisis here, so it'll definitely help.
And what's that initiative in front of the legislature now?
It's a bill. It's already passed unanimously through the House a couple of weeks ago, and so now it's up to the Senate to make it a reality. It was part of the House Bill 2456, and then if you're looking for it online, it's the minority report piece of 2456.
And so 2456, that initiative is regarding the offshore tax havens.
Right.
And specifically your effort to get the economic data accessible to the taxpayer, you're approaching that through a direct contact campaign? Is that what's going on, calling the governor?
Yeah, so our campaign, No Secret Money in Salem, we are working, well, we just released our research report, and then we are working to engage our members and the public at large on this issue to, you know, call and email the governor to say that you want more transparency for economic development tax subsidies in our state. Know where your tax dollars are going, because we all, as taxpayers and as Oregonians, have a right to see how our money is being spent.
If you were going to try to make the case for the damage that this kind of secrecy does, what would you say to me?
Well, I think that I'll take the positive side, which is I think that transparency promotes good government. It promotes fiscal responsibility. It enables every member of the public to be a government watchdog and really keep track of how our dollars are being spent. So the lack of transparency, I think it hurts our democracy, and it makes people, the public at large, less engaged with politics and budget issues, which I think are incredibly important. So transparency only creates good in our society.
Fair enough. And how can people engage with your effort?
So please go onto our website. It's osperg.org. We have a lot of information. All of our research reports are on there. Feel free to contact me if you're interested in getting more involved. And we also have online petitions you can sign, which we have posted on our Facebook page, which is facebook.com/osperg.
And that's OSPIRG. And you're also engaging folks to actually reach out and call the governor.
That's right. So if you feel passionately about this issue, as with any issue that you feel passionately about, you should let the decision makers know. Good way to do that is pick up the phone and give them a call. So the phone number to call the governor, his general line, is 503-378-3111.
Great. Is there anything else you want to say about these issues, secret money and the offshore tax havens?
No, I think just in general, I think if this is something that you care about, get involved. We definitely need to show our elected officials that people are concerned about these issues, and that's really the only way that we're going to see change.
Okay, that sounds like a good suggestion for people to consider. So, again, I've been speaking with Celeste Mayfren. She's the consumer and taxpayer advocate for Osberg, which is the Oregon State Public Interest Resource Group, talking about secret money in Salem and also the offshore tax haven issues, which, again, directly relate to the overarching theme of our show, which is getting rid of secret money altogether. No matter where it is, it's corrosive to democracy, it's dangerous to you and me, and it is anti-free market principles. Hidden money does not allow the consumer to have feedback into the market, and it disrupts the entire process that supposedly our democracy is built on economically. Thanks for coming down and talking with me, Celeste.
Thanks for having me.
Speaking with Maggie Murphy of Transparency International regarding efforts being undertaken to tear back the veil shrouding secret banking, especially in the offshore arena. She has just returned from a meeting with the G20 in St. Petersburg, Russia, where the efforts of journalists around the world, including the International Consortium of Investigative Journalists, are starting to show some promise in that the leaks of offshore information are starting to get international attention and perhaps even leading to actual remedy of the situation by world powers. Greetings, Maggie, and tell us what your feelings are about the efforts being undertaken by the G20.
Great. Yeah. Thank you, Jimmy. It's a really exciting time, I think, for the anti-corruption movement. I think there has been a lot of recent attention in the news, not just in the US, but across Europe. It's really started to become much more visible. That might seem like a really easy, simple thing to say, but actually the issues that we're talking about, and these can be highly complex issues, these were not really talked about that much just 5 years ago. They were seen to be something to do with the financial system. It was all very complicated. Tax havens weren't very well understood. And now, actually, with the great efforts of some fantastic journalists, just as you mentioned, with the so-called offshore leaks that really shed light on the lengths to which some people were going to conceal their wealth or to hide their wealth or to even evade tax. Some journalists have really shed light on some of these issues, and that's brought it up to the fore. Now, one thing that might be interesting, and this is something we're getting from discussions, not just in the G20, but also in the G8, the talk is now shifting a little bit to throwing transparency, to shedding transparency onto global financial affairs. And I think this is interesting because maybe corruption was seen to be, as a term, was maybe seen to be a little bit too aggressive or something that states didn't really want to talk about because they knew that it was going on, but maybe they didn't know how to tackle it, or maybe they didn't want to tackle it. So now transparency is the big word, and both the UK, who are hosting the G8, and Russia hosting the G20 this year, both of them are talking about transparency being key to what they want to achieve this year. And so I guess one of the big issues for Transparency International, but also a whole load of other NGOs, non-governmental organizations, lots of small-scale civil society organizations that are working together, one of their key issues is really to shed light on what we call beneficial ownership. Now, this is when companies and organizations, they own a smaller organization that owns another organization that owns another organization. Sometimes those organizations are based in tax havens. Sometimes they're based in for example, Delaware and Nevada, that are seen to hide a lot of these transactions. And the point is that when those places allow these companies to proliferate, they don't always ask, well, who owns this company? And all we're really calling for is, in many ways, just to shed some transparency on who owns these companies, so that if there is someone that's transferring illicit wealth, that could come from drug smuggling, it could come from trafficking, we need to know who it is that owns these companies so that we can trace that money and so that investigators can actually move in. That's one of the big asks from not just from Transparency International, but from wider civil society as well.
Transparency International is making 9 requests of the G20 this year. Among them is increased whistleblower protections. Tell us about that.
Yeah, well, this is really key, because if we do not permit people inside companies that know that something bad is going on, but they know that if they raise the question, if they raise the issue with their superiors, maybe they'll get the sack, or maybe they'll be demoted, or maybe they'll be shut out from future discussions, even though they're doing the right thing. And what we want to be able to do is to enable those people that are actually acting in the long-term interest of the company to be true. We need to be able to enable them to actually come forward, to be able to blow the whistle on corrupt practices. But the problem is that in many countries, whistleblower legislation is either very weak, usually non-existent, so there's no protection in place for that employee. And in other cases, you find that there's plenty of loopholes, so that a company does not, for example, have to act on the information because of one clause in the legislation that says that they don't have to act if this and this and this. Now, that's a real problem, especially if the whistleblower isn't aware of that loophole, because they could sacrifice everything for the greater good and not be protected when they think they're going to be protected. So that's really our key issue is to push on that. And we know, for example, that Canada and Russia right now, they're discussing new legislation, but we need that legislation to be strong, because we know that it's very difficult and timely and costly to change that legislation when it's in place. So we need to act now before it's even created.
The ICIJ's efforts at exposing the international offshore banking networks has really shaken things up worldwide, with Europe making the first efforts at addressing this. Tell us your perspectives on the efforts being promised so far.
Well, I mean, it was a shock for Europe. It was especially a shock for France. There was a number of very embarrassing stories that came to light. And something that I think should be shocking to everyone listening is that it wasn't just big business people that were hiding their wealth. It wasn't just politicians that we feared were probably doing something like that. There was a whole number of people, from celebrities to dentists, you know, all kinds of people that had been moving their wealth and then had lied to the general public about that. And that was the case for a couple of European countries, which became very embarrassing for them. But I think you're right to say, you know, that there was a sudden big movement, and European countries are switched on. And David Cameron, for example, in the last couple of weeks has really pushed on wanting to increase transparency. As I mentioned earlier, so it's this new word that they really want to shed light on this. But he has a particular agenda, and that's to make sure that the money that is leaving the UK actually should always stay there. So it's really a focus on tax. And that's really, really important, because a lot of people are taxed very highly and they don't have the opportunity to shift their tax elsewhere. However, there's another element that's being lost, and that's something that Transparency International is really trying to make sure doesn't fall out of the picture. And that's the fact that these tax havens that exist, they are often hiding illicit financial flows. These are corrupt. They are criminals that are shifting finance. That could be through, for example, huge sporting events where there's large-scale betting scandals that are taking place, shifting money or trafficking children or young women. And the proceeds of that crime can be hidden in some of these tax havens and then laundered because they are returned back to a legitimate country. And no one realizes that that finance is actually, hiding a huge amount of criminal activity with a lot of real people suffering. It's not a faceless crime. So that's the one aspect. It's great that it's on the agenda for the reasons of tax evasion. However, that's not the only story. We need greater transparency to make sure that people are at the other end, the faceless victims are able to stop their suffering as well.
We here at Occupy Portland Radio have joined the effort of a group known as Operation Outrage to call for the U.S. government to simply seize the entire offshore banking networks. We feel that the case can be made on the basis of national security that we are justified in doing so. I understand and accept that this is an extreme position. What sort of remedies is Transparency International calling for specifically?
Well, I think that, first of all, the most important method of changing what we think is wrong and changing this bank secrecy is definitely through people power and through raising the voice of people that have said, you know, this is enough. There's no reason, for example, for the US government or for the French government or for the Indonesian government to really take action unless their own citizens are calling for it. And I think that something that's really important, as I mentioned at the beginning, with these, with the increase of journalism, and I think, you know, I pay homage to you for taking the time to really use these ways of reaching out to people to make sure that they realize that there is something they can do, but also to provide the information so they can get angry. I think that's really important. I think that the way that we see it is that we think it is, it's beyond a national problem. We are an international organization. We're looking at it from across the board. And it really is it's a global problem, and it requires like a global solution. But each of the people inside their countries need to put the pressure on their governments to take action. The problem is that the U.S. government cannot seize, for example, funds that are currently in U.K.-controlled territory. And so we would advocate really acting across the board, using the G20, piling the pressure on within those countries. And we're also looking at making short-term practical steps, really calling for something they can do right now, and something we really hope that they will commit to in the G8 summit in June, but also in the G20 summit in September, is to just take the simple action of creating mandatory public registers so that we know who owns which companies, and so that the companies themselves know who owns them and who they own. Those public registers sound so simple, and yet they're not in place right now. In the EU, only 4 countries actually have this beneficial ownership to hand. And we also think that those registers should be public so that the members of the public also have the right to have a look to find out whether they want to invest in a particular company or whether they want to buy from a particular company. And if they're not sure, if they're not confident with what they see, then they have the right as well to take the action to not invest or to not buy products from that particular company. I mean, I think that people power is working. I think that in 2010, when the Dodd-Frank Act was adopted, I mean, that called for companies that were involved in the extractive industries to start reporting what those companies were paying to governments on a country-by-country basis or on a project-by-project basis. Now, that was, again, something which just seemed simple. Of course companies should you know, report back and tell and transfer the information about which governments they're paying and how they're operating. But it was only this year and right now that similar legislation, which is a little bit stronger, is actually being adopted in the EU. Now, that's just the US and the EU, and we're also calling for Canada and for other countries to take similar steps. And these seem very simple. You'd think that these were already in place. But we really need people to continue to raise awareness about the fact that this information is not known, and also put the pressure on their local decision makers as well as their national decision makers.
Do you agree with us that secretive banking is the linchpin to the host of issues that we are facing at this point regarding progressive movements?
I think it's fundamental in the context of financial networks. I really do think that this is one area which just is aching for transparency to be shared. There are a number of other global issues, of course, that are not necessarily tied down by secrecy in the financial sector. I'm thinking about gender, women's rights in particular countries, for example, human rights debates as well. But I think at the same time, all these issues are connected. And of course, transparency and shedding, getting rid of that secrecy is one of the most important things that we can be doing, because citizens are asking for it. They want to know why and where their tax goes, and they want to know where companies' tax is going as well. They want to just have the opportunity to decide in the full knowledge where they're going to invest their money or where they want to put their money. And so I think it's just it's simple. Greater transparency allows citizens to make decisions with better knowledge, and that way we can shape the global agenda a bit better. And things start at home as well. I think all those small steps that all of your listeners can take, starting to look at the how transparent the companies they want to buy their bananas from, for example. I think it's really important that we're all ethical citizens. You're doing a great job to get this issue out there and on the table, and I just hope that you continue the good work.
Thanks again for your time. I've been speaking with Maggie Murphy of Transparency International via Skype. She's in Berlin and has just returned from a meeting in St. Petersburg, where Russia is holding the presidency of the group of 20 largest world economies. And we've been talking about the G20's efforts at fighting corruption worldwide. You can learn more about Transparency International and their efforts at the website transparency.org. Can buy me love.
Money can buy me love. I'll give you all I've got to give if you say you love me too. I may not have a lot to give, but what I got, I'll give to you. I don't care too much for money, but money can buy me love. Can buy me love. Everybody tells me so. Can buy me love. No, no, no. Tell me that you want the kind of thing the money just can't buy. I don't care too much for money. Money can buy me
What you do is rather like the way that the criminal erases his traces. You make yourself invisible. You don't have any contact with money. This is all happening behind the scenes. Nothing has got your name on it.
So I'm here and I'm talking with Monica about the tax-free tour available at filmsforaction.org. Hey, Monica, thanks for coming and tell us about this documentary.
So the tax-free tour delves into the world of offshore tax havens, and even though there's a plethora of often hazy facts and figures in the amounts that are a little hard to wrap
my head around anyways, they do a really good job of laying it out in a way that still makes sense, but I mean, it's still a little overwhelming, these offshore tax havens.
So this film is looking at the offshore networks that we're talking about, the secret money that we're talking about, and this film is examining it from the tax standpoint. Some of the aspects of this issue that they touch on in this film is how this system is set up and maintained.
Who takes advantage of it? Who helps, who facilitates it to run? The different parts of the world and their respective tax rates, and which companies are doing it, how they're hiding it so well, how they're covering their traces so well. So it goes, talk to a number of different people that have been investigating and researching this issue, and they have a lot of really good insight to all facets of the issue.
You were telling me about a KPMG-trained accountant, Richard Murphy. Let's go to a clip of him talking about how the system is set up and maintained.
There is a whole world out there of people who are letting tax havens operate. They are really three types of people. There are bankers, there are lawyers, and there are accountants. Together, we have called them the Pinstripe Mafia. Why? Well, because they look remarkably like me. They are probably grey-haired at the top of the tree. They are white, they are probably male, and they are professionally qualified. They probably speak English, and they quite possibly went to a British university. Multinational companies need to be serviced by familiar advisors. And the familiar advisors are always going to be the big four firms of accountants: PricewaterhouseCoopers, KPMG, Ernst & Young, Deloitte. They are the constant feature of every tax haven, in fact. Without one of those firms, or maybe all of those firms being present, you really will not have a tax haven. But you'll find all the familiar names of banks, whether they are British or they are Dutch or they are French or they are US. So Citigroup will be virtually everywhere. Deutsche will be virtually everywhere.
So that gives us a little sense of how the system is set up. Tell me some of the other voices that we hear in this documentary and what they have to say.
They also interview a lawyer, investigative journalist, and economist, James S. Henry, who was actually the first person to take a stab at quantifying the size of the offshore industry. No one else had done it before him, and his numbers are undisputed to date. So he calculated, and it's supposed to be a very conservative calculation, that there are about $21 to $32 trillion flowing through this offshore industry.
And he also has some comments on the relationship that these very powerful moneyed interests have with the rest of us. Let's listen to that for a second.
In the interests of this underlying group at the very top of the global economic order, come to have more influence than ever in the last 20 years under the impact of globalization. Their interests, I think, are fundamentally at odds with the interests of the rest of us.
So this group that he talks about at the top of the heap there is a very small group.
Yeah, he says that it's about 0.14% of the world's population, which is about 10 million people worldwide, control 95% of the offshore world. So they have very different interests at heart than pretty much anybody else in the world, your average citizen.
Well, I'm a little disappointed to hear you say that. It just, you know, really speaks to me how Occupy Portland got it wrong. It's not the 1% versus the 99%. It's the 0.1% versus the 99.9%. So thanks, Mr. Henry, for further clarifying and growing our ranks. Just like that, we grew almost another 1%. But otherwise, it seems like we had it figured out. So they talk about the way that the networks are set up. They talk about how small a group is actually controlling such a vast amount of resources. But they talk about how, you were saying, funneling profits to Amsterdam.
Right. So the Netherlands has the most tax treaties in the world and offers very low tax rates on intellectual property. So they actually mentioned that 91 out of the 100 largest companies in the world let their revenues flow through the Netherlands through these mailbox companies that they set up. And the sole purpose of that is because they get such low tax rates on their royalties on intellectual property, they funnel their profits through there and report a loss in the actual country in which they're performing their business.
So one of the techniques is to try to siphon off royalties, which they're sending to the Netherlands, which recognizes very low tax rates for intellectual properties. And another one of their techniques is these tax-free zones that companies demand in order to go into countries and start business. Let's let Itiel Wyrus of the University of Nairobi comment on what's happening there.
Basically, these are zones where you will go, you will build your factory, and then for 10 years, maybe the government will not collect tax from you. These exist pretty much in every country in Africa right now as we speak. And what we've discovered in all the countries is that when that 10-year period ends, they close up and they move. So that's what has happened. In the Kenyan EEZs, there are no companies that last longer than 10 years. And if they have, the ownership has changed. So when the ownership changes, then the tax holiday gets extended by an additional 10 years. When mining companies are investing in a country, they're coming because that natural resource exists in that country. It's not because of the tax. The minerals are not going to be able to move. They're not going to take a walk across the border because you raise up your tax. But for some reason, this concept has just not penetrated into developing country governments. They still think that they have to beg multinational corporations to come into the country and then beg them to set up. But what actually happens is they take the resources and then they go. This is crazy. The whole point of a tax holiday is that you get a break for 10 years while you set up your business, you crystallize it, then you start to show profit. Then you're in the country and making profits and paying taxes. That was the point of giving you the 10-year startup. Not that you come in, invest, extract as much as you can, and then leave the country. That's exploitation.
So we've talked about the setup of these offshore networks, who is involved in maintaining these, how small they are, what they represent as far as competition between the various classes, because this is absolutely a class warfare issue. And we talked about how they're skimming off some of the profits with royalties, the tax-free zones that they seek. But recently, a British commission was convened to look into this. Tell me, set some of that up that we're about to listen to.
So there's footage in this documentary of the English Parliamentary Committee that confronted three representatives, one from Google, one from Amazon, one from Starbucks. We see Matt Britton, who's there representing Google, Andrew Cecil for Amazon, and Troy Alstead for Starbucks. So basically, they're being confronted with the issue of why they are reporting losses when, in fact, clearly they're hiding their money somewhere. Otherwise, they wouldn't still be operating in the country.
Let's listen to this recording, the audio of the video that's included in the documentary of that British Parliamentary Commission taking these three representatives to task.
The purpose of our session this afternoon is to try and understand why you don't pay the corporation tax, really. That's the issue that we're focusing on this afternoon. So can I start with Starbucks, Mr. Alstead? My understanding is that you filed in Companies House losses for most of the years that you've been running coffee houses in the UK. Is that right?
Yes, that's correct.
And the other thing that is odd to me is that if you've made losses in the UK over 15 years, what on earth are you doing business here?
We know that we must be in the UK to be a successful global company.
But you're losing money here. It just doesn't ring true, Mr. Alstead. No. That's what frustrates taxpayers in the UK. It doesn't ring true. You've got to give us a better explanation.
Mr. Alstead, my heart's begun to bleed for you. I'm going to have to rush out down Victoria Street and have a double caramel macchiato because you're in such a bad way. I mean, for 14 years of trading in this country, and you've paid, what, 1.6 million in corporation tax. I mean, you're either running the business very badly, or there's some fiddle going on.
Now, is there a special low-tax regime in the Netherlands on royalties?
Yes, there is. We have a tax ruling that we've had since...
So it's less?
Oh, yes, it's a very low tax.
So there is a tax advantage to you for paying the royalties in the Netherlands?
It's a favorable tax rate that we have in the Netherlands on all income that comes in from all over the
region. That's why you put it into the Netherlands?
It's not why, but it is an attractive reason to be there. There's no question.
It's why. Yeah.
What is the tax rate you pay in the Netherlands?
I'm very happy to provide that to the committee. I'm bound confidentially to the Dutch government on that.
What?
Just confidential.
Confidential to whom?
Sorry. The tax authority, under our Dutch ruling, they've asked us not to share that publicly.
And you have a special arrangement to allow you to pay less tax in the Netherlands.
Yes, it's a low tax ruling that we have in place.
And it's for that reason that you therefore transfer the profits from the UK, which are booked as losses in the UK, into the Netherlands. Some of that then goes back to the States, but the rest of it is paid at a lower tax rate in the Netherlands under a Dutch tax ruler.
We've been communicated to...
You don't want a real tax.
Your chap is nodding
behind. It's a sweetheart deal you don't want to reveal to us.
Chair, I think there might be some issues we should be raising with the Dutch government.
Well, I'm just wondering, is it the Dutch authorities that said you couldn't reveal it?
Yes. They've asked us to hold that in confidence over time.
Okay.
The other thing I would also highlight, we've paid in excess of $100 million in payroll taxes in the last 5 years. We've paid tens of millions in business rates in the past 5 years.
And I've heard this argument before. Let me just kill this argument because it really makes me cross. On the one hand, so does every other business. So the community-based bookshop that you're putting out of business also pays business rates. Also pays its PAYE. And the other thing is, you depend on the services that come out of the tax you pay. So, you know, you depend on the ability of your of getting your goods around, so you've got to get the roads in place. You depend on all those things. And probably worst of all, both you and Mr. Alstead employ people on probably minimum wage, if we're lucky. And then we, the taxpayer, pick up the tax credit bill for that too. So we're putting a lot of money back into the people you put. And you're not putting enough tax into our economy. That's what's riding us all. I shouldn't have done that. Do you, all of you, accept that alongside your duties to your shareholders, as Mr. Britton has just alluded to, you have obligations to the societies in which you operate, from which you derive huge benefits, and that those obligations include paying tax?
Yes.
Yes, very much so.
And do you accept the principle that profits should be taxed in the countries in which they're made and where genuine economic activity is concerned?
Very much so.
Yes.
Profits should be taxed in the countries where the economic activity takes place that drives those profits. So in our case, where the innovation takes place. our business is made in...
So I've been speaking with Monica Andrade about the film The Tax-Free Tour, talking about offshore companies, how they dodge taxes in unimaginable ways at unimaginable levels, and what some people, at least, the British Parliamentary Commission there that we heard are doing about it. Thanks for coming and talking with us about The Tax-Free Tour, Monica.
No problem. Thank you for having me. And again, that film is available on filmsforaction.org, and I urge everyone to watch it. There's a lot of very important information there that everyone should be aware of.
Thanks. So we'll end this little bit with my favorite audio so far from The Tax-Free Tour.
They've actually got to do something with this money, and they're lending it to governments to pay for the deficits that most countries around the world are running. So, mysteriously, tax havens are funding the deficits which governments are running because they can't collect enough cash in the form of tax from companies because they're hiding it in tax havens. So we go around in a giant circle here where these companies are lending this money to governments instead of paying it in tax to make sure that the whole world system keeps going. It's bizarre, but that's what is going on. All of that means that the options available to government to actually go forward to generate new growth to meet the needs of their electorates is being undermined. And therefore, this is, frankly, threatening democracy, in my opinion.
Thoughts and emotions of an inadvertently diverse plan of united independence and remembrance of events to be introduced eventually. Reactions to worldly endeavors from reverence to revulsion, many an action from whatever's clever to a flawed notion, one awareness like an ocean, one body, many parts, many choices to be made, many minds to many hearts, any kind of mindful bliss to counteract ignorance, to kiss the cold cheek of decadence. the death of faith to the flames of conviction. Simplify reasoning for appeasement of natural endeavors, worldwide usage of redeemable qualities, idealistic realism to opportunistic action as opposed to active disowning of unreasonable deficit, the rest of us left to sit and argue and throw a hissy fit. Strong shoulders have we to be sat upon, giving piggyback to backbiting pigs. Leave the undefined string of words behind, save the politicking for the blind. Death. Death to dishonor, the practice thereof. Left to ponder the world at large, left to wander whether self-aware or gone astray. Relevance prerequisite of life. Elegance not required, truth requested.
1, 2, 1, 2, 3, 4, 1. If you got the money, honey, I've got the time. We'll go honky-tonkin' and we'll have a time. We'll have more fun, baby, all the way down the line. If you've got the money, honey, I've got the time. There ain't no need to tarry, let's start out. Bring along your Cadillac, leave my old wreck behind. If you've got money, honey, I've got the time.
For Occupy Portland Radio, I'm Jimmy Tardy. We've been speaking with Celeste Mayfriend of the Oregon Public Interest Research Group. We talked with Maggie Murphy of Transparency International via Skype from Berlin. And we heard from our friend Monica Andrade about the Tax-Free Tour, a documentary available on filmsforaction.org. We had music from Cyndi Lauper, The Beatles, and Willie Nelson. And we also heard from our friend DJ Helium with some spoken word. Our theme today has been secret money and the negative effects it exerts on society and what we can do about it. For Occupy Portland Radio, I'm Jimmy Tardy, and remember, Occupy!
You are listening to KBOO Portland, 90.7 FM, 91.9 FM Hood River and the Gorge, 100.7 FM Corvallis in Albany. The time is 6:58. Coming up at 7 o'clock is Hard Knock Radio, and at 8 o'clock, it's Drinking from Puddles.
May 10th, 2013, Station Navigator Report. If you're interested in being on the board of directors for the KABU Foundation, the candidate packet is available online at kabu.fm, or hard copies are available at the station. Deadline for applications is June 28th. For those listeners who missed the public meeting Saturday, May 4th, there is a written transcript and an audio file available for your reading and listening pleasure online at kabu.fm. Last but not least, save the date for our birthday kickoff event, Breakfast with the Boo, featuring fruits, nuts, and flakes, Saturday, June 1st, 9 a.m. to noon, at the Matt Dishman Community Center. Please join us as we celebrate our 45th year with pancake flippin', bluegrass pickin', and birthday card makin'. Thank you so much. Have a great week. This has been the Station Navigator Report. Lynn Fitch.
I'm Celeste Carey.
And I'm Cecil Prescott.
Join us this coming Monday for more Talk Radio, when our guest will be Professor Akinyele Umoja, Chair of African American Studies at Georgia State University.
We will discuss his new book, We Will Shoot Back, Armed Self-Defense in the Mississippi Freedom Movement.
Umoja argues that armed resistance was critical to the success of the Southern freedom struggle and the dismantling of segregation and black disenfranchisement.
Find out more about this little-known aspect of the civil rights movement this coming Monday, May 20th at 8 a.m. on More Talk Radio, right here on KBOO Portland.
For your names you took hope and humble, black and tan. Your whipped wind of change howled low, blowing itself smack in the middle of Ellington's orchestra. Billy heard it too and cried strange fruit tears. Your resistance was found in the food that you placed at the master's table. Ha!
Born and raised in Portland, Oregon, the internationally renowned visual artist Carrie Mae Weems is known for her art investigating issues of race, class, and gender. Her show at the Portland Art Museum ends this Sunday. Tune in to KBOO on Friday morning at 11 a.m. to hear a talk she gave at the opening of the exhibition in February. That's Carrie Mae Weems, this Friday, May 17th, from 11 a.m. to noon on KBOO. More information can be found on the website kboo.fm/Carrie Mae Weems.
Yo, this is M1 from Dead Press.
Hey, what's up? This is Boots from the Coup.
Nah, I mean, telling you to stay tuned to Hard Knock Radio.
Keep it locked.
On the move, this is Pam Africa on Hard Knock Radio, the station of resistance. Down with this rotten-ass system.
Yo, check this out. Hard Knock Radio coming at you, bringing the noise. This is Chuck D, Public Enemy number one. News, views, and hip-hop.
Peace and love, this is Azeem. And you're listening to Hard Knock Radio, real radio, from the concrete up. All the way to the sun. Keep shining, y'all. One love.
What's up, folks? This is your girl Femi representing the whole Bay Area. I'm here on Hard Knock Radio. News, views, and hip-hop. Stay tuned.
This afternoon, Hard Knock Radio, and in the building with us, she is a legend, classic. We all remember the song Afro Puffs when it came on. I mean, if you were sitting down, it meant that you had no legs. And she's a real spitter when it comes to being an MC. It's the one and only Lady of Rage. How you doing, sis?
I'm great. And yourself?
Good. You know, many people that are listening know you for those songs, but we also forget you got your acting chops, right? So you've been doing you ain't just been sitting around writing rhymes.
No, I haven't been sitting around writing rhymes, but what a lot of people don't know is that acting is my first love. Rap is just a vehicle I use to get to acting. I haven't really got the roles that I've wanted to thus far. I'm not knocking any of the roles that I have received thus far, because they're going to get me to the next thing. Mm-hmm. But, you know, I would love to show my range. I would love to cry, be emotional, a victim, because when people look at me, they don't see me as a victim. Like, I'm not messing with her. Yeah. So I'm the victimizer.
Well, you know, I forget that that was your first love. Most people go from the rapping to the acting, mm-hmm. but you come in the other way.
Right, I come in the other way. And from third grade, when I was little, and I watched the actresses and actors on TV. Back then, they were called superstars. So in the third grade, I wrote a poem called Superstar. So I knew then that that's what I wanted to be. So superstar/rapper.
I like that. I like that. Now, originally, you're from Virginia, right?
Yes, Farmville, VA. So what you got to say?
Well, Farmville, is that near, not Richmond, but that's right near. It is near Richmond. Okay.
Hour west of Richmond.
Okay, well, I got family in Richmond, okay. So I know.